word onto this computer. All right, it's official.
You're so big and like.
Well, I'm leaning in, sweetie. You got to lean in, like Sheryl Sandberg said, right?
Yeah, I guess.
Lean in to the business meeting. Happy Thursday. It's almost the weekend. How you feeling, my darling?
Good.
Good.
I really want to read this article about Nicole Kidman.
Let's see it. What about this guy?
But I don't understand why she has short hair. That's Adam Levine, but I'm confused by this short haircut.
What are you confused about?
This, why does Nicole Kidman have very short hair? But then on
because
the next
she went
page,
to the barber.
Well, but then on the next page, she has very long hair.
And first she got the haircut, and then first she took the pictures to get a haircut.
Who's watching Big Little Lies?
Kate is. Is anybody else? Sweetie, why don't you tell people why they should watch Big Little Lies?
So you should watch Big Little Lies because it's super good. If you haven't seen season one, you should watch season one. You should actually read the book first, Leanne Moriarty's book.
Soup's good.
So the story goes like this. I'm not going to tell you the story of Big Little Lies, but how this all
it's
got
about
together.
Huge, tiny lie.
Just so a few things, and we're going to get to the Zen talk, but this is really important. Because there is a message in here. So Leanne Moriarty wrote this book called Big Little Lies, and everybody loved it, and it was great. And it just so happened that Reese Witherspoon and Nicole Kidman have a production company, and they both went after it because they both wanted to produce the movie or the show. And they both figured out that they both went after it. So guess what the women did? They said, let's come together and do this together. Both star in it, both produce it. And they did. And then it won a million Emmys because it was so good. And then they're like, okay, this won a million Emmys. What should we do? We need another story. So they went back to Leanne Moriarty. She wrote a second book that she hasn't put out because she doesn't want anyone to know what season two is about. But I've heard
she wrote the book, didn't publish it. Yeah. They made all the HBO movies.
And you know, I got to be honest, maybe she just wrote the screenplay. I don't know if she wrote a book, but you know it's going to be put out.
You need to write a screenplay before you have you need the book comes first and then the screenplay.
I know, but she didn't plan to write a second book. She had to write a second season because HBO wanted it.
Got it.
So let's go.
Here we go. So we have only one question. So I'm going to lean on you all to help us with the questions after we're done answering this first question.
I have things if they don't.
And if you don't, sweetie has things that she wants to share.
Or I can't.
Whereas I have nothing. Empty. Zero. Here we go. And this is a heavy one. So sorry we're starting with a heavy one, but it's important. But
we have the space and bandwidth to handle any questions.
Do you know this question yet? Okay. My sister has struggled with addiction and mental health issues throughout most of her adult life. She's been in and out of treatment centers more times than I can count. Our relationship has its ups and downs over the years, but we have been in a good place for the last couple of years. She's been sober and stable for about 2 years now. She has a 3.5-year-old son, and despite her struggles, has always been an absolute wonderful mom. Her ex-husband is very toxic, and the relationship was nuclear. Well, after a year-long custody battle and tens of thousands of dollars, it saddens me to say she lost custody of her son to her ex. Our family is distraught. I'm sickened with the thought of my sweet, loving nephew being raised almost exclusively by her emotionally abusive, chauvinistic ex-husband. I also can't help but feel anger towards my sister for making the poor decisions which led to this place. My sister is talking about an appeal, but it would likely be years before any real custody changes were made. Her ex still let my parents and I see him occasionally, which is nice, but also heartbreaking as right now my sister isn't able to see him, mainly because her ex now has the power to say no and he wants to hurt her, not because of any legitimate concern for his well-being. He's so young and doesn't understand why his mom, who he lived with almost exclusively the last year and a half, suddenly isn't around. Do you have any advice or tools for how I can, number one, better cope with and accept the situation myself as I've been sick over it for weeks? Number two, be an emotional support for my mom and sister. My sister is not coping well, but is maintaining her sobriety as far as I know. And last but not least, number three, ideas for things me or my family can do to help support my nephew despite this limited contact. That is a mouthful. So I'm going to let you start because it's a hard question to answer, sweetie.
So
So obviously there's no, like, I don't have any simple answers for this at all. But what I would say is, because you are able to.
Sorry, I just switched microphones.
Now is it on this one?
It will as soon as it does this.
Blue snowball. Does the audio come in a little better now than it did at the very beginning? Better, same, or worse? Oh, it's a little better. Okay. Thank you.
So what I would say is that because he is allowing some visitation with her and the grandparents, I would make something consistent. I would say, as long as we're seeing him, can we make it an every Thursday date at 2, or can we make it every other Saturday at 4, or whatever, make it a consistent time to see each other, so that you know that there's something in the books. Again, that doesn't guarantee that he will follow through, but I think it at least demonstrates to the nephew that there's people who continue to show up for him. I don't know, again, I haven't been in the court system for a long time with people, so I'm not quite sure how all of it will play out as far as appeal, but an appeal is one thing, but you can go to the court and ask for consistent visitations without changing the structure of, how do I want to say this? Changing what the agreement was. You can ask for something consistent, have something written down. That in itself may take 6 months. I don't know. One of my girlfriends is going through this right now, and
I know the court system takes
forever.
A really long time, yeah. Even if it's like set up perfectly. It's
exactly. Ridiculous. And so I don't want to be like, oh, this is going to be simple. But even though an appeal might take years, there's other options while the appeal is taking place. And it just, it does cost money and it costs time. And this is this is why there's no simple answers to this, because when children are caught in the middle of other people, of parents' challenges and anger, the child just loses. I mean, and you know, like, that doesn't mean there's no hope. That doesn't mean that there's anything that there's nothing we can do. We can keep showing up the best we can. I think sometimes when we're hearing other people's stories, it just can remind us how sometimes our own frustration and anger or inability to deal with our own pain, how that trickles down to our children.
I have a few things.
Sure, go ahead.
First of all, this is heavy. Second of all...
But when you say heavy...
It's heavy.
Yeah.
You're right.
You're right. It is. I think just sometimes because of the person asking the question.
I just being very real with the person who's asking.
Okay.
So I bless you, and this is a challenge, but you can go. You can get through it.
Yeah,
you say in your email, I can't help but feel anger towards my sister. So you got anger towards your sister. You got anger towards her ex-husband, who sounds like is not the best person in the world. So my first thing is I would... continue to take care of yourself. Do some self-care. I don't know if you have a therapist or a coach or a good friend, but you have all this stuff built up, which is sounds like it's very warranted, by the way, but you can't let it sit
fester.
Here. You can't let it fester. And, you know, this email to us is a good start,
yeah.
But it certainly can't be everything. So I would encourage this teammate to continue to get the support they need so that that person can support sister, nephew, everybody else. And it's weird, like her questions actually go in order, in my opinion. How can I better cope and accept the situation myself and have been sick over for weeks? Like, you need to do that first.
And can I add to what Todd's
sure.
saying? Because Todd's 100% right about the self-care piece. It's also not all your responsibility.
True.
So like
good
you
point.
Kinda you have to remember that you can play the role of supporting your sister when she needs it and showing up when you can, but it's not for you to solve.
You're not going to be able to fix this. The situation is too big. The only thing you have control over is how you're going to show up in this situation. But if you can work on your own work with processing these emotions, then I think you'll be in a better position to answer question two, which is to be an emotional support for your mom and your sister. And, you know, there's also, it sounds like there's some positives in this too. Like, your sister was an addict. Your sister is now sober. Through all this trauma, you know, losing your son, sounds like she's still sober. So there's, you can find the silver lining in any gray cloud. Mm-hmm. So I would just, the challenges are going to, you know, be staring at you from the get-go. So you might have to look a little bit harder for the silver linings, but they're out there. So I would make sure you balance out some of these challenges with some of the goodness that is coming up. But I think what Kathy said is especially important is you don't have control over this. And at the end of the day, you do your best and you do your best to wait the results in peace.
That's our bathroom sign.
It was. I don't know what happened to that sign.
Another thing, I remember Matt from Team Zen asked a similar question because he had a daughter that lived long distance. And we talked about being creative. Like, if you feel out of sorts one day and you don't get to see him, write him a letter, send it, send pictures, ask the ex-husband if you can FaceTime sometimes, ask if the kid, and I know he's very little, but an email account. Mm-hmm. Like sometimes we have to be out of the box. Like we may not be able, the dad might not allow him to show up at a certain place of time, but if he's receiving mail from his mom, his aunt, his grandma, then he knows, you know, like your question is how he's probably thinking, where is everybody? And if he's getting some kind of communication, that's helpful.
Yeah. And you're going to, like Kathy said, you're gonna have to think out of the box. Like if he doesn't have email, as long as his ex-husband will allow him to receive mail, that's where I would start.
Me too.
And even if it's a picture of you and your sister or a picture you draw for this little man, whatever it is, but just engage. And it sucks. You want him to be able to come and go and show up and visit him, but that's just not the situation you're in. So you're going to have to get a little more creative. And I do think what Rose said in the chat box is especially important. And she said, have you considered Al-Anon? Because it's been a wonderful program for me. I know my sister, who's an addict herself, has been a major part of Al-Anon in regards to my mom. And so I just know Al-Anon has done some wonderful things. And I feel, I've never attended an Al-Anon meeting, but I think a lot of it is boundaries. Like, what do I have control over right now? What do I have influence over right now?
Well, and it's just realizing how a system has been set up for you that sometimes you didn't even realize what you had been, when I say playing into, I just mean sometimes when you live with an addict, the way that life is structured is so different. I've had so many of my girlfriends and clients who didn't even figure out that they were living with an addict till they were in their 30s. Mm. Like that's how normalized their childhood was around the addiction.
Well, it's like I used to say, mom, you know, when I was growing up, my mom would get drunk and be like, she's weird. And I didn't.
He used to say she was weird even when he was 25.
It was weird mom. And I didn't connect the dots. Like it's not weird mom, it's drunk mom. And maybe I didn't want to believe it.
Right.
I don't know what happened.
Oh, it's a protection. As a kid, you disassociate it. You call it by something else. It becomes your normal. Hmm. That's the thing is that we, like with children, I was just listening to a podcast. It was one of Dax's podcasts. For those of you who listen to Dax, the guy who's on New Girl, who's the doctor, who's Jess's boyfriend.
Yeah, I know that.
David something. Anyway, he was on there. And he was talking about he went to a prep school, like a sleepaway school. What's that?
Boarding school.
Yeah, sleepaway school.
Sleepaway.
And the teachers and the kids used to shower at the same time.
Ooh.
And Dex is like, what? And he's like, it was so normal. Like,
well, I used to shower at my coaches at wrestling.
Well, and that's what he's saying is the teachers were the coaches and that they would all shower in a communal shower. And Dex is like, that can't be true.
Yeah, and there was no walls or nothing.
No,
we're all in
big
a big
communal shower.
Yeah.
And how like, you know, normal things are for children is my point. You know, we don't have to go down that track. But, you know, like he didn't say anything happened to them. They just, kids only know what they know.
Yes.
They don't have the version of life we do. You know, you grow up in a certain home and someone's weird part of the time, you just think they're weird. We just watched Boyhood again last night with the girls.
So good.
And there's so much of that.
It's on Netflix. So it's free. If you have Netflix, it's free. You don't have to like buy it. And I love that movie.
I know. I think someone has a question.
We have a few questions, but I just want to acknowledge the other man on this call, Matt, the Blue Jays fan right there. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Mm-hmm. Get to know that name, sweetie. Can you say it?
Vladimir Guerrero Jr.
He's sick. Sick in a good way.
Sick like good.
Yes. He's 20 years old.
My daughter, JC, says sick.
Think about that. 20 years old. Anyways. All right.
All right. Let's go.
So we're going to go over to Kara. Hi, Kara.
All right. Hi.
You're on.
All right. So I'm calling, I think, to get support, but then also maybe to help me maybe rethink some of my approach. So with the last few podcasts that you guys have had and the Zen talk on emotional labor and just overall, I guess, kind of household balance, it's made me realize, again, just how out of balance our house is. And part of that is because, and I don't want to make excuses, but my husband has ADD, mm-hmm. and I've had a history of when I've tried to rely on him for things, he's disappointed me. Mm-hmm. And so kind of to protect myself, I have just not relied on him for a lot of things. I've decided it was easier to just do it myself. I know it'll get done, and then I'm never disappointed. Mm-hmm. But it's not a good way to be. Mm-hmm. It's not healthy for our relationship, and it's not healthy for me. So I did have our first conversation, and he responded really well. He is a wonderful man. Mm-hmm. He has very good intentions. Post this conversation, I did see his first attempts at trying to be more helpful. I would say, though, it almost was just even more disappointing to see how misunderstood I am. But I think I know where I am with this, which is that I know I just have to keep coming around and keep having the conversation. But I guess that is just why I thought I would open it up to you guys, just to get the encouragement, and know that this is a journey. It's not a one-time conversation. So I think that's it.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay. So thank you for that, Kara. And just in the chat box, you have two of the teammates that are on this call that can relate to what you're going through.
Yeah, lots of me toos.
And
me
too. You can probably relate to this also. I try my best, but sometimes I suck. It's just the honest truth. What I thought of when I heard you ask this question, Kara, is although you had this conversation and you saw some changes, you ended up being disappointed in his attempts. And I don't know, for me, I just feel like, yeah, it didn't go as well as you wanted to, whatever that means, but you're closer now than you were before you had the conversation. And this is a challenging road, because we're trying to fight the systemic things of what responsibilities are in a household. And it's not easy to make these changes. I've been on this podcast for 8 years. I've been married to Kathy for 16 years. And there's mornings when I wake up and forget everything I've learned. So I don't really have any words of wisdom. I just want to support you and your husband as you kind of navigate through this tricky territory. And the fact that you had the courage to bring it up. I know I was just talking to a mom at an event I was at on Monday night. And she's like, emotional labor, emotional labor, emotional labor. She's like, I love it. I love it. I'm sharing it with all my friends. And I said, what did your husband think? She's like,
I haven't done that yet.
And it's scary, because why is it scary, sweetie?
Well, because you don't want to be rejected. You don't want to be made to feel guilty. And when I say be made to feel guilty, I'm very aware that we can only feel guilty if we choose it. Blah, blah, blah. But what that means is that when someone says to us, well, I work so hard. And so let me explain it this way. Like, I'll just talk about Todd, but I'm sure that Kara and everybody can relate. When I look at Todd during the day, I feel exactly the same way Kara does. I think Todd is a wonderful man, and he works hard, and he's a good dad. He's a great dad. And he's just a lovely person. He's doing all these things. And so it's very difficult to notice all that and then to say, and?
Mm-hmm. Can you do more?
Can you notice what's going on with me or whatever? And part of why it's difficult, it's not because I'm weak or I'm a wimp or any of those things. It's because I really do relate to Todd. I really understand him. I love him. I care for him. I want him to be happy. And I have to figure out that balance between what my needs are and most of my life, majority of my life, especially as a girl growing up, you know, all of us are in a similar generation. Some of you are like 10 years or 15 years younger than me, but we're around the same place. We were kind of taught to be really nice, and we were taught to like put everybody's needs before ours. And we were also taught to not ask for too much. And we were also taught to like be a leader. And it's all these really conflicting messages that sometimes in our most important relationships, it's hard to know what, because the truth is, Kara, you're like me. We could do it all ourselves, right? Yeah. I mean, we'd be pissed about it. And we would
that's the problem.
Right?
Yeah.
But and that I think your indicator is what mine is I don't want to resent Todd. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And when I start to resent him is when I realize it's not about what can I do and how much can I get done. It's about, I want this relationship. Even if it's so funny, Kara, I don't know if you feel the same way, but like, I don't really mind even helping with the thing if I know that he sees what needs to be done. It's really not about you do it so I can sit and put my feet up. It's not like that. It's that I don't feel that there's an understanding of what I'm doing. And if he makes some attempts to and starts to see it, and he I'll give you an example. Tonight, you just did this. So one thing I've complained about, one thing I have brought up to my family over and over again is after dinner, everybody cleans up the table and then there's crumbs and crap all over the table. Everyone's like, we're done. Table's clean. And I'm like, it's not. There's stuff all over the table. And so I always come back and wipe up the table. And Todd's always like, why do you wipe up the table? It's not a big deal. There's really nothing on the table. Okay, I'm telling all this because tonight I have brought that up a number of times. So I put my arms down and there's crumbs and it's gross. And tonight I heard Todd say to Cameron, here, take this and wet the table and clean the table. She's like, why? And he's like, well, it just makes your mom feel better. Mm-hmm. And that's fine. If he needs to say it makes me feel better, but he knows that's part of the routine now. Why? Because I've learned that works best for all of us. Someone sits down to do an art project, and if there's crumbs and wet all over the table, their art project gets ruined.
So should I have said because it's part of living in the house?
No, I'm not criticizing. This is a compliment. This is full on compliment. Okay. What I'm saying is that you have heard me. you used to say it doesn't matter.
Oh.
And then you listen to me over and over again.
But would the next step after, because mom wants it done, would the next step
I don't care.
More evolved to be because
you've incorporated it as part of the process. Okay. That's all I care about. And even if you don't, see, the thing is my goal and your goal, Kara, and everybody's goal here, it's not to make our significant others be like us and think like us all the time. It's to, Gemma actually used this language last time we talked to her and I loved it. There's reasons why we do the things we do. We have to take responsibility for the times that we're just being like perfectionistic and you don't have to fold the towels at the corners. Like we don't have to be right. That way.
What's the phrase she used? Like a basis of standards.
A standard, yeah.
Like there's some certain minimum standards.
Because we have learned that works best. And so when you say to me the table can stay dirty, I'm like, in my lifetime here as a mother, I have learned that when the table stays dirty, there are issues that occur after. A, it's just gross. B, like I said, people put their homework down on it and it becomes a mess and they're like, ah. And then three, like when we come to eat here again, I have to clean it up anyway. There's reasons. It's not about the details I'm using. The reason I'm telling these long stories, Kara, is that of course it takes a number of conversations and you maybe can switch the language because I'm big about words. Because disappointment is a real word and I'm not saying you're not feeling it, but maybe to give it some better language, you can say, he's doing it in a new way that I'm still adjusting to how I experience it because then you won't feel like he's personally trying to disappoint you.
And then Jacqueline just wrote in the chat box, shared standards. I think that
shared
was
standards.
But there's two more things I want to say real quick. And then Kara, I just want to hear if you have any takes on it. One is this is a long play, kind of like what Kathy just said. Like if you're going to do this to try to fix it in the next day or week or month, it's not even worth it. Like why even bring it up? Because it's not going to change that quick. You have to look at like, this is a long process. And I don't know if this will make sense, but there is a time, actually still now, sometimes I bite my nails and I'll be really close to Kathy. And
just do it so they can hear it. It's super annoying.
So if I'm on the other side of the room, it doesn't bother her. But when like we're right next to each other, she'll literally bat my hat,
well,
my hand.
No,
first
I
she'll ask,
did bat your hand that one time and you got mad.
It was more than once, sweetie. It was more than once. It was more than once.
But you got so pissed at me, I didn't do it again.
Well, here's my thing, and I'm not justifying it. Like I am a freaking work in progress, to say the least. But there's a part of my primal male cultural condition thing
that makes him want to eat his nail.
Is no, that's not it. Is don't tell me what to do. You know, and the, you hear the energy that I just use with that, like, and I think a lot of guys have that, and it's not right. But we're trying to shift this thing that is messed up, and bred into the fabric of how we're brought up as boys is don't tell me what to do. I can do whatever I want. And
yeah, it sucks when people try and tell people what to do and take away their legal rights and oppress them. It's really something men have to deal with all the time.
Totally. Okay. So anyways, I'll shut up. Kara, what do you think?
No, I think this is all good. I think it's the encouragement I need. And I do know that this is especially, I mean, it's something we've been working on for all 13 years of our marriage and will continue to work on. So yeah, I just need to keep going.
And really, even Kara, instead of doing it by yourself, talk to him about that word disappointment and say, I've been kind of telling myself a story that you're disappointing me. And that's a real feeling. I'm not denying the feeling because I feel that too. But say to him, I'm going to try and use a different word because I know you're not intentionally trying to disappoint me. You know, like yeah. I know that, you know, you're just doing, and I'm going to, you know, go along with the process because then it makes him feel like, because, you know, and again, he may not know that word disappointment. You may not have used it with him, but.
Right, but he feels it.
He feels it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, yeah.
So, even though he's not verbalizing to me, it is a big deal and one that I know he wants to work on, even if he doesn't know that this is why.
Yes.
Well, you know? and if your husband, what's your husband's name? Would you share that with us?
Oh, sure. It's Phil.
Phil, if Phil's listening, I'm going to say this and hopefully he knows that I'm saying this from compassion, but I know, Phil, your intention is not to hurt your wife's feelings, but as guys, as a guy, sometimes I hide behind my intention. Forget about what the intention is and how is it impacting? How is it landing? And if it's impacting your wife negatively, a woman I assume you love and a family that you're trying to co-create in the most healthy way, focus, put as much attention on the impact as opposed to the intention, because I use intention as an excuse sometimes. So, Phil, look, you also try to reframe it. So I don't know if I'll ever listen to this again, but if he does, Phil, I love you.
We've got a car trip coming up, so I think I'll
Phil, I love you. And
me too. Just Phil, your ability to have this conversation, you're light years beyond a lot of people.
Absolutely.
And because it doesn't initially make sense because, you know, Todd and I have been having these conversations just today because he's having this virtual tribe thing and they were having a big discussion about, you know, biological traits of men versus
biological versus traditional versus toxic masculinity.
And there was all these conversations about, you know, I'm paraphrasing here, but this is just what men are like or whatever. And sometimes, and as a species, not all men, I'm not doing the all men thing, but there hasn't been a lot of pushback or questioning on men.
Because we haven't had, we're not used to it.
Exactly.
We're not used to being questioned.
And nobody, and everybody appreciates everything men are doing all the time. Like I have such deep regard and love, especially for the men in my life. But it doesn't mean that there aren't things that as a team and as parents that we need to do together, possibly differently. It doesn't mean Todd is flawed. It means that as a team, we have to work together. And a lot of times there's offense taken too early.
I'm going to mute Kara, but I'm going to give her one more tidbit that we got from Nikki. Nikki said to identify the family chores that he is great at and get agreement that are his thing, like mowing lawns or rubbish bins or quick and high impact. ADHD people love that. I don't know what the quick and high impact thing means.
Quick and high impact things that you can get done.
Okay, just real quick. So anyways, thank you, Nikki, for throwing that out there. Rose is next, but she just left, so I'm going to see if I could pull her in. Rose, paging Rose. Rose, paging Mr. Herman. Mr. Herman, you have a telephone call at the front desk. Does anybody know what movie that's from? If you do, put it in the chat box, and I'll get you a gift. Look at, I see Lindsay typing right now.
Lindsay knows.
Oh my gosh. So we're going to ditch Rose.
Oh my gosh.
We'll come back to her.
Just go. Oh my gosh. Did I didn't like that movie.
Don't say it.
Yes,
see, Lindsay got it.
Gets a gift.
Hold on. Before I unmute Dawn, Lindsay, you officially get a t-shirt or a water bottle. What do you want?
She's got a water bottle.
I'm good. I'm
come
good.
Come on. Let me send you something.
I'm just happy that you know that movie.
All right.
Lindsay's like, quit giving me Zen parenting stuff.
She's got enough.
She's got so much.
All right. All right. We're going over to Dawn, and we'll go to Rose afterwards.
All right.
Hi, Dawn.
Hi. I just have a quick question. This is something that I've just noticed about myself recently, and I don't know if it's normal behavior or not, but I have a differently wired daughter who does some things sometimes that people find inappropriate or not age appropriate. And one tiny example is she frequently burps out loud at the table in front of, you know, not just family. Mm-hmm. And I've noticed I'll say, okay, Bethany, close your mouth really nicely, like just how I'm saying it, like, don't forget, close your mouth and whatever. But I'm like narrating this alternative behavior every time. And it just occurred to me the other day, like, and I do that for any abnormal behavior that I see her doing. I say in front of somebody else, I'll say out loud, oh, you know, da, 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 and I'm gentle about it. But I don't know. I just started wondering. I know part of me is doing this as a signal to other parents that I do see that this is different. And I do see that you might find this offensive. And so I think instinctively it's self-protection as much as it is trying to instruct her. And so I've started to wonder if that's what's going on. Is that normal? Do other people do that? Should I just be in silence when she's doing something that's abnormal and stand by her, but, you know, maybe say something in private? I don't know if any of that's making sense. It's just something I've noticed recently, and I don't know if it's okay to be doing that, I guess.
So, before Kathy answers, I want to just clarify, because I don't know if I understand the question, Dawn. Bethany burps, and you say something polite, reminding her that it's not appropriate, and you're wondering if you should say that or not say that?
No, she's wondering if she's doing it for her daughter or if she's doing it to make sure the other adults in the room know that she's trying to, like, alleviate the other adults from their discomfort by teaching her daughter in their presence.
Is that right? Is what she said right?
Yes, and I do that with a bunch of other scenarios too. And I'm just wondering, I don't know if anybody, I mean, it doesn't matter if you have differently wired kids or not, they're all going to do something that's embarrassing. So this applies to everybody. Excuse me, but I don't know. I've kind of noticed it in our culture too, a lot of narration. It's gone from like yelling at your kids, like, that now people are like, I'm being calm and zen about this, but do I need to be saying it out loud? And I don't know. It's just this, I've started to feel self-conscious about it, if that makes sense.
Well, maybe you don't know the answer. Maybe the reason you're asking this question is because you don't know the answer to the question I'm about to ask, which is, why do you think you're doing it? Like, you don't know, or you're trying to figure that out?
I've started trying to figure that out. I've noticed that I do it, and I've started to feel, I've just started questioning it and try. And I guess I need some help with that, figuring out why I'm doing it. I have to be in all honesty that I am signaling to other parents that I do see that this behavior is different and that you might find this, excuse me, offensive.
Quit asking questions.
Go ahead.
Unless it's like relevant to.
Last question. Do you have more than one kid?
Two. Yeah.
Is the one normal?
Neurotypical. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Neurotypical. Would you, if it was a boy or a girl?
Boy.
If he burped at the,
younger.
If he burped at the table, would you say something?
Yeah, he doesn't, but
if he did, would you say something?
Yeah, I would.
Okay, now I'm going to let you talk.
Okay.
But it happens so frequently that I feel like I'm constantly narrating her in front of other people.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. You know, this is the kind of situation where I would say that it depends and it's going to differ depending on the situation. I think that it's okay that sometimes you're trying to alleviate the anxiety of the adults around, not because they're more important than your child, but to dissipate the tension so they know that you understand. Mm-hmm. Now, the difference is, are you, like, let me give you, I'll give you some examples. If, then this happens, like you said, this is not just about, you know, neurotypical children or non-neurotypical children. If one of my, children burped at the table, I would probably say burping is totally not a problem, but we don't do it at the table. You know, like a very simple, like it's not really narrating for everybody else. It's just kind of saying burping isn't a problem. It's just where you're doing it, you know, because everybody's eating. Unfortunately, I have to say this to my husband also.
I have a lot of gas coming out both ends.
Yes, I have to comment on it a lot. This is not just child discussion. Because when I'm at the table, I burp and it's not that those things are foreign to me. It's just, what I always say to Todd is it's just kind of like a, you know, it's a manners thing, you know, we're all at the table, blah, blah, blah. So there's no problem with that. If you are in a situation where your daughter does something that you would, you know, is not typical, and she's not hurting anybody. Like there is this, and when I say not hurting anybody, that really what the behavior that she's doing is not a problem. That's when I would question, like there's this scene in Parenthood where their youngest son, Justin, he likes to put a bucket on his head and he likes to run around and butt things with his head. And he's doing it at a family function and the mom, Mary Steenburgen, just goes, he likes to butt things with his head. And I think that's a great example of narrating without changing the behavior. Like you're seeing what the other people are seeing too. You know, she likes to run in circles and do that. You know, this is not a problem. You don't need to change it. You're not going to make her feel bad about it.
It sounds like you're saying, is there an in-between of not saying anything?
Absolutely.
To like saying it like with some sense of it.
He butts things with his head. Yeah. You know, like burping at the table is an opportunity to teach because and not to make them feel ashamed, but say burping, I have no problem with, let's just not do this at the table. It's just kind of what our family does. It's just manners. And I always have jokes like, what are you going to do when the queen comes over and that happens? You know, I try and make light of it, because it's not like I'm trying to be so mad and serious, but it is a teaching moment, right? Regardless. But if she's just kind of silly and has her own thing and she beats to her own drum and you notice the parents are looking, you can be like, yeah, she beats to her own drum without changing her. Mm. But you are acknowledging what the parents are seeing because that breaks the tension for you. Do you see what I mean? You're not making excuses for her. You're just, and then there are times you probably don't need to do either because the parents are just as into their kids, you know? So I think you're already kind of on the right track by saying you're just recognizing why are you doing things? Because you're right. I think we all narrate more than we think we're narrating. And this is where I see a lot of situations where kids start to get super annoyed at their parents. And maybe you've recognized that, Dawn, like where like we'll be at the grocery store and we'll kind of like be talking about our kids like they're not there or, you know, like we're like trying to entertain the other person and we're forgetting our child is like there. And the child's kind of like, what are you doing? Like, why are you making this person feel good about who I am or whatever? That's when, you know, that's when I feel, I'll just speak for myself. I can tell when I do that. And my girls have remembered those times and they bring them up to me. Skylar would be like, remember when I told you that I saw somebody and then you went up to their mom and told them that I just seen them. And to me, that's no big deal. But she was like, don't try and get popular with other people by sharing my stories, that kind of thing. So it's a little different situation. But my point is we're sometimes constantly talking to make ourselves feel comfortable around our kids and with other adults. And you can kind of play a game with it.
There's nothing more, our sensitivity skyrockets when our kids are doing any form anything of misbehavior different. In front of adults. It's just, I don't know why. And I'm sure there's some moms or dads that have a disregard.
You do know why, because we think it reflects on us.
Reflects upon us, right. But it's just, there's a lot of things that reflect on us. Like, how I show up for work reflects on my ability, but there's something special about kids misbehaving in front of other parents. Like, I don't know. It's just a highly sensitive thing.
We judge other parents that way.
Yeah.
So we can't be like, it's a lie to say you don't judge, you know, not Dawn, but all of us. It's not true. We judge other parents.
I do it all the time.
So what that means is that we are going to naturally believe everybody's judging us. This is like one of my favorite teachings from Deepak Chopra. As soon as you let go of judging other people, you stop judging yourself. And I used to think, oh, I don't know if that's true. But it is true, because as soon as you let go of observing other people and making thoughts about what they're doing, then you start to realize you stop judging yourself about it. But at the same time with parenting, it's so fraught with emotional.
Yeah, like parenting, religion, politics, like it's a third rail.
It is.
It's like Julie Lithcott-Haynes, who was at our conference. Her first book was about parenting your kids, and her second book was about racism. So she.
And she said the second one was like, not easier, but the first one has created more conversation and more, because parenting has all this
baggage,
especially when you're questioning what parents are doing. Right. So, you know, so Dawn, there's like a bunch of things that Todd and I just said. One of them is, sure, notice what you're doing and see why you're doing it. Number two, it's totally fine to teach your child in the midst of, even when there's adults around. Simultaneously, it's completely fine to not say a word. And then you can find somewhere in the middle where maybe you acknowledge what people are seeing without correcting her. Mm-hmm. There's like all those things.
Dawn, do you have any last thoughts on that? You good?
No, that's awesome. Thank you.
And I think I asked you to do this last time, so I won't do it this time. Or maybe it was Anita. Dawn has a micro community within Team Zen. And I don't know when's your next. So if you have a child who's differently wired, Dawn, I think, is open to having you join this micro community. Right?
For sure.
And do you know when your next one is?
It's TBD. It's being voted on right now. We don't have I'll let you guys know once we have the next date.
Okay.
And Dawn, something that we told Aaron to share with you is Todd and I have a good friend named Cheryl Stoller, and she is a coach who focuses specifically on children who are neurodiverse. And she actually emailed us and said, could I talk with your micro community sometime? So yeah, she's an expert. She's really good. You'll really like her.
So Aaron's going to reach out to you about that. So we have 13 minutes left, which is good for Rose. I'm going to mute Dawn and move over to Rose. Hi, Rose.
Hi.
How are you?
Well, I'm in the middle of a kid having a meltdown. So
we've all been there.
one caveat, just sort of piggybacking on Dawn, is that it gets confusing. I'm one of those parents in the micro community, and it gets confusing when, although we're not wired differently as the parents, some of those behaviors are not misbehavior.
Totally.
Mm. You know, so... but it appears that way to everybody else, and you don't really. So for me, and I won't speak for Dawn, but I get embarrassed. Like, and I mean, I grew up in this. My brother has special needs, so I've known it my whole life. I was embarrassed as a kid when he was silly talking, you know, talking in sort of this. And I would correct him as a little kid, and I didn't know. I mean, it's multi-layered. Your point is still taken. I'm not, you know, disagreeing in any way. It just, that judgment, when your kid is having a fit and you know that they are not, it's not accessible for them to just calm down in that moment. I find myself going like, I want to scream in a Target, like, my kid has autism, would you just shut up? You know, like, and I know that's not my fault. But you do have that moment of like, oh my God, you have no idea what just has gone on for us to get inside the damn Target.
Yes.
Much less. No, so I'm not, I hope you take that with a grain of salt.
For sure. Yeah.
So my question kind of piggy, it's really funny. This is all so cyclical always, right? So like the first woman who was speaking, and I'm sorry, I forgot.
Kara,
thank you. That resentment piece, that the Gemma talk was very triggering. Mm. But also like validating at the same time. And my marriage has fallen apart, you know, and is done. And so that resentment piece doesn't go away. And I've gotten a lot of help for it, and I continue to receive the help. But trying to co-parent in that respect, when someone isn't well, if you will, you know, someone is struggling with current addiction, and doesn't take any kind of criticism. And I mean, I'm not a psychologist, but I would guess that my ex-husband is could be easily diagnosed with like full on narcissism. So that having a conversation is it takes a lot of effort to have a constructive conversation on my part and be very calm and centered and grounded throughout that process. Mm-hmm. I don't know where to put that resentment or anger when it continually keeps occurring. And I'm wondering if you have any tactics for, like, I'm doing my work. I know I'm doing my work. I'm noticing, I'm naming and allowing that Anne-Marie Chiaresso. I think I've listened to that episode at least 29 times and I've sent it to everyone I love. Like that, it was just groundbreaking for me, but I don't know where to put that sometimes. And then when my son if you are autistic, if you have autism, you also are an egomaniac. Like, you know, like that's kind of how it presents. And there is a bit of narcissism in that. So it can be triggering in the same way. Mm-hmm. So it's like, all right, reframe, pause. I have these things in my toolbox, but I don't know where to put the resentment at the end of the day when I'm absolutely exhausted.
Absolutely.
Wow. That was very eloquent.
Yeah. Oh, I totally.
It sounded like verbal vomit to me.
No, I understand.
I totally get you. And Kathy will probably do a better job answering it. But there's no magic words that we're going to do to make your challenges go away. But what I thought of is, once again, like, there's, I guess, two things. One is you have bottled up emotion, whether you call it resentment or anger or something. I don't know how to tell you how to express that. But the fact that you're even asking the question of how do I express that is a healthy thing to be asking yourself. So I don't know what the answer is. Maybe it's beating up a body bag at a gym, or maybe it's going to a therapist, or maybe it's going on long walks, or maybe it's praying, or maybe it's meditating. I don't know what that is. But the fact that you're asking that question is an important one that I invite you to continue to explore. And then the other thing is just the difference between circle of control versus circle of influence. Like, the one thing you do have some control over is how you express these emotions. You have no control over whether or not your ex-husband is a narcissistic and continues to show up as a narcissistic man. Like, that is outside of your realm of control and your influence. He's going to do anything regardless, maybe in spite of whatever it is that you do. So I would just keep reminding myself is that these things that your husband does that makes you nuts or makes you stressed out is things that you cannot undo. You can't tell him to not do it. Yeah. So anyways.
So will you check on the rabbit?
Sure.
Did you hear him jump? out?
Sure.
She just like jumped out. I'm like, where's she going? She's been weird lately. So there's three things I thought of. The first one was based on the first thing you said about like Dawn's question and about, you know, like you said, the embarrassment and that kind of thing. I right away, and you've probably seen it before, but we're going to post it in the notes. I thought about Kristen Neff's TED talk about self-compassion. Kristen Neff like wrote the book about self-compassion. Brene Brown used her research for her book. And, you know, she also has a child that was diagnosed with autism, and she talks very specifically about her own discomfort and her own embarrassment and her own shame. And she just talks about how she used self-compassion and how that was like the key to her being very loving toward herself, especially in those moments. For those of you who've seen it, you know that she talks about that she was on like an 8-hour plane ride and her son had a total meltdown. And she had to get him to the bathroom. She said she was like trying to get him down the aisle, get him to the bathroom. And she's like, and I got to the door. And of course,
it's occupied. She's like, stand there. And she's like, and all I could do was a practice of self-compassion. Mm-hmm. That's all I could do. Like, there was nothing else to do. And so her ability to do that in the midst of the tantrum then allowed her to take care of him. And she didn't say, oh, and then it was, you know, magically easier. She just said it shifted the energy a bit. So that was the first thing, which is different. But the second thing is, you know, one thing that just worked for me last week that I'm going to suggest to you was something Liz Gilbert suggested in one of her blogs, which was, if you have a feeling that keeps coming up for you, you need to write a letter to it. And you don't need to write a letter to it just once. You, like, her mine that I wrote a letter to was fear. And it was really interesting. You know, and again, this is not a religious thing necessarily, but has anybody read Neil Donald Walsh's Conversations with God? I don't see any nods. Okay. So the way he writes it, it doesn't have a religious affiliation. He uses the word God as in universe or the wisdom that lives in all of us. So he's using the word God in that broad way. But in Conversations with God, basically all he does is write to God with questions, and he writes back. It's the same person with the pen, but we actually have more answers to our questions than we realize. We just don't take the time to recognize it. So I would say, like, it's with me, I'll speak about me. When I wrote to my fear is so freaking brilliant. Like, it knows exactly why it's afraid. And I'm not freaking brilliant. My fear is brilliant because we all have the same body wisdom. We all come from the same place, you know? And it was like, I was like, I'm just afraid of this and this and this and this. Why are we afraid? And it was like so clear. It's like, because you don't want to be alone, because you want to belong. Like, it was so obvious.
So wait a second, you wrote to fear and then some wisdom showed up?
You just keep writing. I have questions and then you keep writing and things come through. That's the reason why I brought up Conversations with God, because if you see the structure of that book, you're going to kind of understand what I mean. And if you read any of Liz Gilbert's posts, she talks about writing to your fear and writing to yourself. And so, you know, it doesn't have to be some grand production. Like, I would just like have a journal where it's like, I'm going to write to my resentment at the end of the day and see what it has to say, because it's like, what is, you know, because we use words like anger, fear, resentment, and they're real. Like, those words are good descriptors, but like, basically what it has to say is, what about, I mean, I don't know what yours will say, but what my resentment is what about me? Mm. Right. I mean, isn't that like a valid question? What the, you know, I could swear and everything, but what about me? and that question isn't super allowed in our culture. People get really like, well, what about you and everybody else taking care of you? Got your son and you need to deal with this. And it's like, yeah, but what about me? And sometimes we need to parent ourselves in those moments. We need to have the ability to say, yeah, what about me? And like the next thing when we get there is, man, you got to have a sense of humor, which I think you already do. Mm-hmm. But I'm not a smart aleck. Would you describe me that way?
No, I wouldn't describe you, but you certainly have.
I make fun of everything. Yeah. And not of people to hurt them. But, you know, like, it's very hard for things to pass me by without commenting on them, like with some kind of, you know, I don't intend to hurt anybody, but even with your son, sometimes to be like, yeah, we're all going to focus on you, you know, like, and maybe you're just saying this in your head, but there's a release of the bubble just with like, yep, not me. I don't need anything. You know, that sometimes that's the way Todd and I communicate, you know, like when we really want to communicate something, we don't use these others' names. We talk in third person.
Well, and Rose, you like the above the line, below the line thing, because you talked about Anne Marie and that. And when you're below the line, everything is serious. Obviously, you're closed, you're defensive, but everything is serious. When you're above the line, it's lighter. There you can see play in it. So the other thing that just occurred to me is we had Tara Moore. Is that her name?
Tara Moore.
On, and in her book, she has this exercise, and it's a future self realization exercise. And it's kind of similar. You get to the same point as what Kathy just described in writing to your regret, but there's this
resentment.
Sorry. There's this exercise that she takes you through, and, you know, you go through this process and you're above your body and it's an out of body experience. And she's describing it to you and all that. And then You meet this person in this cabin in the woods and you don't know who it is or where it is. And as you get closer, you realize it's yourself 30 years down the road, and you have a conversation with this person, and you in present day ask this person that's 30 years older than you are, is what did I have to learn from this and this and this? And what you'll find is you know what the answers are.
This is
all happening to you for a reason. Doesn't mean you deserved it. Doesn't mean you created it, but it's here to teach you something about yourself. And there's a part of you, just like I know there's a part of me, that has this inner wisdom. We talked about wisdom today.
Yeah.
The logical and emotional.
We talked about DBT, you know, there's cognitive behavioral therapy, and then there's DBT. And the DBT is all about understanding your rational mind, your emotional mind, and how those two lead to your wise mind. Mm-hmm. And so your wise mind is sometimes when we're too in emotion or we're rationalizing our emotion, our wise mind doesn't have the opportunity to say, hold on, you know, it's okay. You know, let's make a choice that's good for us. Let's have some sense of humor. The wise mind is the parent self. Mm-hmm. And that when you're doing the activity that Todd just said, like doing the, and by the way, the wise woman activity in Tara Moore's book, I did it. I actually did it with her, like when I saw her, and it was so extraordinary for me. I actually still have a poster board in my office from that experience. And one of the things, my wise woman had long hair, and it was when I still had short hair. And the wise woman is like, yeah, why isn't your hair long? Because that's where we're going. And I was like, oh, okay, I'll grow my hair. That's why I started growing my hair. Was because of that. Isn't that funny? So it's not about growing your hair. It's just, it was interesting how I was like, yeah, I've always wanted long hair. Why don't I, you know, it kind of awakens yourself.
Do you want to say why you didn't have long hair in your 20s and 30s? And I make fun of you for this.
Why?
Because the haircut lady said you couldn't grow.
Oh, yeah.
She had this, I can't stand haircut ladies that charge $250 to cut hair. Like, I go to Great Clips, and it's $7.99.
With a coupon.
And they give me a great haircut.
They don't.
Look how good this hair is, to be honest with you. So this lady.
That last part is a misperception.
This lady says, oh, Kathy, that you can't have long hair. And I'm like, what does that mean?
She told me I didn't have a face for it.
What does that mean? And she's a dear person, and she cut everybody's hair at the wedding or whatever.
But you know what we realized? She cut all of our hair like hers. We realized that we all looked like her. And she did charge us a lot. It was in Chicago at this salon, and then I stopped going to it, and I started going to my friend Lindsay. And then I was like, Lindsay, I kind of want to grow my hair. She's like, let's do it. I was like, oh, okay. I thought the $250, it really wasn't that much.
It was a lot. I get the credit card statements.
That was when I would get highlights.
Don't do that either. It's just, you know, I like your hair the way it is, sweetie.
Oh, boy. No, that's about last night. You can look this way. What does she say? You don't have to do anything.
It's Demi Moore and Rob Lowe, and Rob Lowe is obviously.
He's like, why do you wear all that makeup? Do you do that for your boss?
And then it's because guys can.
She's just, like, no, you wake up looking that way. I have to do
But don't
things.
You think Demi Moore when she was 20. Demi Moore.
Or is it Demi?
I don't know. Don't you think when she was 29. When she got out of the shower, she looked pretty damn attractive.
Sweetie, Rob Lowe
is a pretty good looking guy. I'm not gay, but if I was, Rob Lowe would be way up on my list.
You have a man crush on him.
But,
still.
But I think the other guy, like Ryan Gosling. Woo!
Justin Timberlake.
No.
You used to.
Well, he is attractive because he could dance and he could be funny. But from a purely physical looking person, Gosling and Rob Lowe have it on Justin Timberlake. Remember Justin Timberlake when he was 21 years old? He looked like a little frizz head. He looked like a punk.
He was a punk, but he had great hair. He has hair like our friend Parker. Yes, he has like awesome, really curly hair, and he can do whatever he wants with it. We love our friend Parker.
We're 4 minutes late.
Yeah, I know. Why are we talking about Parker? We have to tell him we were discussing
him.
I love
Parker.
So, Rose, does that make sense? Like, I can't stand answering questions with do more work. You know, because you're already doing so much and you're already so aware that sometimes I get so frustrated that I actually have to journal more and meditate more. Like, it's exhausting, but you don't have to do it every day if you don't want, but it may be interesting to be like, write a letter to your resentment and then practice self-compassion and realize and have humor. Like, and then that will take you to another thing.
Well, and when you screw up and you get resentful, which you will because you're a human being, bless yourself.
Yeah, man.
Love yourself for it.
we have some narcissists in our life, and man, they're exhausting.
Sweetie, my dad gets here tomorrow. Don't worry about it. He would know how to turn this computer on if the world was going to end. He'll never listen to
Or if he was on, he'd get a phone and then break it because he pushes all the buttons and he'll say, fix it.
He breaks phones like no other. I don't understand. So anyways.
He just bought a new iPad though.
That's a whole nother podcast talking about my dad.
We love him dearly, but
let me tell you something about my dad. He's a 79-year-old man. And like 6 months ago, he drove from Fort Lauderdale to Tampa.
And got lost.
Got lost. He called me. He's like, I don't know where I am. I don't know where I'm going. I don't know if I'm going east or west. So we had to be on the phone with him and like ask, have him turn right, turn left. I was on the phone with him 2 hours. So then on Sunday, I'm like, Dad, you haven't asked me to book your flight back to Chicago yet. I'm a little worried that you think you're going to drive up here. And he lied to me and he said, I would never do that, Todd. That's crazy. 2 days later, he's lost in Arkansas.
He was driving.
Which is not in between Florida and Chicago.
And do you know what he says when I say, I call him Grandpa because that's the way I soften him. I used to call him by his name, but we would argue a lot. So now when I say Grandpa, all of a sudden we're both like really soft. So I'm like, Grandpa, I'm like, you know, we just don't want you to get hurt and we just want to make sure. And he's like, I don't want people telling me what to do.
No.
Does that sound familiar? That's like the biting of your nails.
Yes, that's where I get it. Thanks, Dad. I'm going to blame my dad. It's in the DNA,
it's
sweetie.
It's just genetics.
I have no choice.
We have no choice.
I have no choice. All right, so we are not going to have another Zen Talk until July. So we're sorry about that, but we did two in the last 2 weeks. So enjoy the
rest. But that doesn't mean you can't ask questions. Like go on the Facebook page or email us. Like for those of you who don't like the Facebook page, just email us. Team Zen is about, we're not really 24/7 because sometimes we go away and do fun things and we're not available or I'm sleeping, but we are committed. I'm so tired. Can you tell that I'm getting tired?
Honestly, this was my favorite Zen Talk.
Was it really?
I did. I don't know why. I loved it.
I liked it too.
And we have a special announcement for our 500th podcast. So stay tuned. Hopefully you guys like it.
Can we tell them or no?
Yeah, let's tell them right now.
Okay.
Oh, look at Dawn. Dawn's leaning in. So we, first of all, for our 500th, I think we shared on the podcast
that our children
are going to be on the 500th, but Kathy and I are starting a second podcast and we're hoping you guys like it. And it's going to be called.
Well, we've already done like 8 episodes.
Right. But it's going to be called.
It's called Pop Culturing.
And what does that mean?
So it's the opposite of Zen Parenting. So what it is it is, so Zen Parenting is self-awareness where we talk about pop culture, and Pop Culturing is we talk about a movie or a TV show and we talk about the self-awareness in it. So we like, so some people say, like, I like Zen Parenting, but I don't want to listen because it's too much or it's too heavy, or I want something light. Pop Culturing is much lighter. Mm-hmm. So we've done Parenthood.
Parenthood.
We've done Bridesmaids.
Bridesmaids.
We've done
A Star Is Born.
A Star Is Born. We've done Stand By Me. So we go kind of deep into the movie. Like, this is what people are learning, or this is what these actors were going through. Our inspiration, we did not rip them off because we did not use their structure, but was the show The Rewatchables, mm-hmm. because I just did not think they were doing a good job diving into those movies. And I said, I got to get my words in here because they did not have a female perspective on these movies.
Yeah. Dawn says, can we search for it yet? No,
not yet.
You guys are the very first
we haven't told
people
anybody.
That know about it. But we're totally excited and
it launches in about a week or two.
No, it launches after the 500th.
Oh, in 2 weeks?
No, 3 weeks.
3 weeks.
Yeah.
And we're just going to like drop one and then the next day, another, and then another for like a week, there'll be one every day and then we'll go weekly. And we're just trying to get the ball rolling.
And if you guys have suggestions, we may not take it, but email us. Don't put it on Facebook page.
I want to do Big Little Lies. So you got to watch season
series.
One. But it's good.
No.
It's about relationships and women and domestic abuse and raising children and lying, big, little lies.
I don't know, man. I don't know. I just want to finish off. Rose said, thank you both so much. I laughed and cried and felt loved.
We love you.
And thank you for your generosity and kindness. I'm so appreciative of both of you.
Well, we appreciate
Rose,
you guys.
We appreciate you. We appreciate this team. I continue to say that Team Zen is the engine that pushes the podcast, that pushes the conference. you know, like it starts with Team Zen and then it goes to the podcast and then it goes to the conference and then it goes to your women's circle and my men's group. But the foundation of what we do.
Pop culturing is way down the list, but it's fun.
So anyways, all right, guys.
We love you too. Thanks for being a part of this. And then email us or, you know, Facebook if you have a question before the next Zen Talk. We'll
and
be here.
Keep trucking, for goodness sake.
Keep trucking.
Adios. Bye-bye. Good job, sweetie.